Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Well, greetings, my friends and loyal listeners on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This is Christopher McClellan, the Bowtie Guy, your presenter for Healing Ties 2.0. After more than 300 episodes of Healing Ties, it's time for me to hand off the microphone and introduce you to new voices in the vast network of family caregivers. As you've heard me say many times on UK Health Radio, caregiving is just not a local issue. It's a universal issue, and it's through story sharing, where diversity meets the road, to collaborate on a common cause. And our common cause is supporting caregivers, rather carers, before, during, and after caregiving ends. Over the next few weeks, we will be introducing you to some of my good friends who are making a difference for carers and caregivers all over the world. Today, I'd like to introduce you to Marianne Sacriro, who is the producer and presenter of Untangling Alzheimer's and Dementia. Marianne is the co-founder and director at All's Authors and a registered nurse who cared for hundreds of dementia patients over her 20-year career. Marianne provided care to her stepfather during his dementia journey and witnessed the painful decline of four beloved aunts to the disease. Her novel, Blue Hydrangeas, an Alzheimer's love story, is based on a couple she met through her work and is a testament to the power of love in the face of this heart-wrenching disease. Let me tell you a little bit about All's Authors. All's Authors is a global community of authors writing about Alzheimer's and dementia from a personal experience to light the way for others. Untangling Dementia and Alzheimer's introduces you to the All's Authors who share their stories and insights to provide knowledge, comfort, and support to carers. Another great component about All's Authors is they are a charitable organization, totally reliant on donations for what they do. Their mission is to lift the silence and stigma of Alzheimer's and other dementias. Be sure to check out allsauthor.com. Now it's time for me to turn the microphone over to Marianne. I am sure you're going to enjoy this episode of Untangling Alzheimer's and Dementia.
At some point, you just have to make up your mind that sitting home and feeling sorry for myself or yourself doesn't get you anywhere. That there was lots of things I could still do. If you can focus on what you still do, because we all lose skills over the course of our life. We're not the same people that we were in our 20s where we could climb up mountains or, you know, squat down on the floor and, you know, with ease, get up. Our bodies change, and our abilities change. And so part of life is letting go of the things that don't bless us or that are harder for us and looking at new possibilities. And when we do that, it's shifting gears from why me to what next.
Hi, Cynthia. Welcome to the All's Authors Podcast. How are you today?
Good. It's so nice to be with you. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And I was looking at your All's Authors blog post today, earlier on, looking at your book about all the masks.
Oh, yeah. I brought it.
Oh, I see that. It's awesome.
It's really interesting how this book came to be. It started with an art class called Art Reflex for people living with dementia and care partners. And we went to the class, and one day there were masks at the table where we were going to do art, and it was decorate the mask. And so we all had the opportunity to paint or use decoupage or whatever to decorate our masks. That day, I don't know what, got me doing this, but I decided I would make a mask about what it felt like to live with Alzheimer's. And so I made my mask, and it was a great class. And then I went home and I started making more masks. I ordered masks from Amazon, and I made 12 masks and then 24 masks. And I'm up to 36 masks. And they've been on display locally and internationally. They were at the National Gallery of Art in Stockholm. But people said to me, gosh, these are so amazing. Why don't you take pictures of them and put them in a book? Mm-hmm. So that's how Unmasking Alzheimer's came to be, because of that one art class and that one mask. And it was, as I started thinking about Alzheimer's, I wanted people to understand how it feels for me. We're all different, but for me, how it feels to live with this disease. And so that's how I got to that.
Okay. And can you explain to us, like, describe what that first mask looks like? Because people can't see it.
They can't see it. Well, I pulled out a mask today. And I'm not sure if this was not the first mask. And to tell you the truth, I'm not sure what the first mask was. I might have to go back and ask the teacher. But this one is one of my masks. And this is Love Remembers. And I was thinking about my journey with Alzheimer's. And as a pastor, I've had the opportunity to be with many people over the years who've had an Alzheimer's or another dementia. And it's been my experience that folks may not remember somebody's name, or they may not recall the details of conversations or situations in life. And I know I struggle with this, but deep in my heart, my experience has been that the love remembers. The love inside the person is connected to the love with the people that they're with. And so I noticed this with my mom as she forgot my name. My mom had Alzheimer's and passed away from Alzheimer's. But as she forgot my name, she knew I was somebody that loved her and that she loved me. And so that's why this mask, why I created this mask. And then I thought about my faith tradition, which tells me, even though I may not remember my name or other names, that God remembers me, God remembers us. And there's a passage in scripture about God writing our names on the palm of his hand. And I just love that image of about the love is something that survives even when the memories don't. So that's just beautiful. An example of, you know, some of my masks are very upbeat, and some of them are a little hard to look at. Mm-hmm. I can remember I had a big exhibit of my 36 masks up, and there was a lady standing in front of the masks. And I noticed she was just crying, and I kind of went up just to chat with her. I knew her, and kind of put my arm around her. I said, "Do you want to talk about it?" And she said, "I'm reading your descriptions," because each of the masks in my book has a description of why I created that mask, what triggered that mask. And she was reading these descriptions, and she said, "I never asked my husband. I never asked him how he felt. And when I read about what you're feeling, and when I read about the struggles that you have, I feel terrible as a caregiver." And I just gave her a big hug, and I said, "Oh my goodness, please don't look at it that way. You loved your husband dearly. You were always there for him. You know, you gave him all your love and all your care." And I tried to help her reframe that, but she kept coming back to, "If we had something like these masks, maybe we could have talked about it." Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of another reason for for creating a book with the images so that people could go to the book and look at it together. And a care partner could say, gosh, this is an interesting picture, you know, and it, there's a picture, I call it the swimmer. I love to swim. But, you know, you could have a conversation about, my golly, I wonder, what are those for eyes? You know, those look like shells. And then I've seen this kind of interaction then it because of, you know, oh, I remember a time I picked up a shell at the beach. And then it can lead to other conversations. You don't have to read the story, but the stories are there for how I experience it and why I created that mask on that day. My daughter came home one weekend unexpectedly. I had all my masks out on the table, all 36 of them. They were all spread out on every surface. And she was like, oh, Mom, do we have to talk? Because some of them are hard to look at. There's one that I call sponge brain. Do I have that one marked? I think I do. Yeah. I can read you what it says about sponge brain. I took one of those bath sponges.
Oh, yes.
And I, right? And I, it says sponge brain. It's number 12. I created this brain sculpture to illustrate how my brain feels like a sponge, that it's not capable of holding on to any new information. It's sad, but it's my constant reality. It's as if my memories have fallen out of my brain, or as though a small creature has nibbled holes in my brain. I have more spaces than I have brain cells. It's a very bleak situation. You'll notice some dark, diseased areas in my brain to illustrate how each person is different and each person's experience of living with Alzheimer's disease or another dementia is a unique journey. This mask also reminds me that after my death, my brain is going to the University of Rochester to be autopsied, and the doctors will slice my brain and study it as they look to unravel what causes Alzheimer's disease, as they look for treatment options and ways to prevent it.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So wow, each one amazing. Of my, yeah, each one of my masks, this one's a cheerful one.
I love that one.
That's forget-me-nots. And so that has a story about forget-me-nots. This one's a feather in your cap. And I was thinking about all the accolades I've received throughout my life. Most of us have had accolades of one sort or another, making honor society, or, you know, getting an award for community service. But it doesn't matter how many accolades we have. Alzheimer's is one of those diseases that it doesn't care how rich we are or poor we are or the status. It affects people across all walks of life. And so, you know, that's just how it is. So anyway, I've led some mask making workshops. That's been kind of a fun thing where I've gone to different places and we've gotten the masks ahead of time, and people are invited to do whatever they want with their mask. They don't have to make it around a disease, although it could be very healing for somebody who's working through a problem.
Wow, that's fantastic. I just want to say that I'm going to describe the mask. First mask that you held up, the mask is a face, yeah, like a mannequin almost, and you have affixed to it heart-shaped gems, they look like, mm-hmm, all over the forehead and, yeah, and on the cheeks, and they're to represent that love remembers. Yes. The second mask has, again, a face with a sponge. It looks like a sea sponge. Yeah, a sea sponge across the forehead. And the third mask is the face again, but with a mass of forget-me-nots going across the forehead. And those were the masks. And you read to us about the sponge. That was wonderful. I like that. So I encourage people to, yeah, get the book so that you can see exactly what we're talking about and get a little bit of insight, because, yeah, I think this is a beautiful expression of what's going on with you. And I think a lot of caregivers and family members and even medical professionals and healthcare providers would benefit from taking a look at the artwork and then reading the stories that go along with them to try to get some insight into what it's like to live with this disease, because there are very few people who are telling us what this is like. And we need to hang on to that. It's very important. So I appreciate you doing that for us today, Cynthia.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to share this. And I think I want to just emphasize how important the arts are for me. They're not only relaxing to make art, but they help me process what I'm feeling. And I've heard that time and time again with others who are living with Alzheimer's or another dementia, that whether it be singing or listening to music or dancing, the creative arts. I started painting just a few years ago, mm-hmm, just after my diagnosis. And it's just been a wonderful way for me to express myself. Photography as well. I enjoyed taking pictures. And it's just a way to celebrate wellness and to stay connected with other people, sharing pictures and sharing art and having the opportunity to display it and talk about it.
That's amazing. So you have an amazing life. I think you've probably always had an amazing life, but since your dementia diagnosis, you have not stopped. Can you tell us a little bit about what's a day in your life? Can you describe that?
Oh, thanks. I try to stay as busy as possible. My mom, when we were growing up, used to say, you know, if you can't think of something to do, I'll find you something to do. So, and I also felt like for me, part of my wellness was staying busy, staying engaged. So I take classes at Elmira College. I'm at my in my 10th year on my 40th class. And this semester, I'm taking a class on the history of pandemics in the world. And I don't remember squat. I do not buy the books because I can't read books anymore. But I enjoy going to the college to be part of the class and listen to the lectures and participate and enjoy some of the other activities on campus. Elmira College has been very, very good to me over the years. And I'm so blessed I can even walk to campus. It's just a few blocks from my house. I like to swim. I try to swim at least 3 days a week minimum. I like to swim laps at the Y, and my longest swim is 1.2 miles. I did it,
wow,
a couple of summers now in a row to raise money for hospice care. I enjoy singing, and during the pandemic went online with music. I sing in a band called Country Magic. I also sing in a choir. The choir's kind of been put on pause for a while because of the difficulty with the spread of the disease, but singing makes me happy. And my church that I served for a number of years invited me back to do a weekly sing. And so I did that on Facebook throughout the pandemic. Once a week, I would either sing for the children, do kind of a kids show, or a hymn sing for the grownups. So I just try to fill my day with meaningful activities. I'm very involved in research and advocacy. I'm on lots of different committees, national committees. Right now I'm serving on the National Advisory Council on Aging. That's the group that gives out research grants. I served on the National Alzheimer's Project Council. I do lots of research projects because research fascinates me. I've been in a project, a research study for 12 years now, where I go every year and they study my brain. They're watching the changes in the structure of my brain versus my struggles, my challenges with my cognitive symptoms, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have like an exhausting schedule. I think anybody would become exhausted.
I try to stay busy because if I'm staying busy, I'm not sitting around and feeling sorry for myself, mm-hmm. Which is what I did in the beginning when I first got my diagnosis. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of planned out my whole life and then this disease came along and disrupted those plans. But once I got to the point of acceptance, then I was able to reframe the experience. And I think about this as my new ministry and the blessings that I've been able to receive by accepting where I am and moving forward. If that makes
sense.
And
when were you diagnosed?
It took me 8 years to get diagnosed. Oh my goodness. I started having problems when I was 49. I was pastoring a busy little church in upstate New York. And I went to the doctors because something was wrong, because I couldn't remember parishioners' names. I couldn't remember what they told me. I forgot meetings. And, you know, I started trying to figure out why. And the doctors had a lot of reasons. You know, it might be menopause, might be a head injury I had, might have been an exposure to a toxin. But there were lots of theories, thyroid, but nothing really landed. And then I moved to a new parish and believe it or not, my problems move with me. You know, they just kind of followed me to my new parish. And the same struggles, you know, where I tried so hard to remember people's names and faces. And I tell people it all came to a head on the day that I got lost on the way to the cemetery. I was supposed to do a memorial service at the cemetery and I couldn't find it. We only have one cemetery in town. Couldn't find it that day. And it was horrifying. Because I had a family waiting and I had to call the florist to get directions. He thought I was joking, but anyway, it sent me for more testing, neuropsychological testing and other tests. And when all the results came back, my new doctor said, this is what you've got. You've got amnestic, mild cognitive impairment due to Alzheimer's disease. And, you know, my mother, as I said, had Alzheimer's and died from Alzheimer's. She had one brother who also died from Alzheimer's. Okay. I have two copies of a gene they call APOE4, and that puts people at a higher risk for Alzheimer's. So it wasn't a surprise, but it was a sadness. As I said, I couldn't remember what I'd read in books. I couldn't follow TV shows. I was getting lost in my car, you know. So I basically had to leave parish ministry because I couldn't do what I was called to do. And when you're the pastor of a church, it's like being the CEO of a big company. You're involved in all the different aspects. And I just couldn't do it anymore. It was too much. And I spent all my days trying to figure out what I'd forgotten and, you know, checking things off. And it was just really stressful. And so the church was so good to me. And I moved out of the manse into a new town, into a new life. And I saw an ad in the paper for a class, 8 weeks with the Alzheimer's Association. And I thought, well, if I've got Alzheimer's, if this is due to Alzheimer's, then I better go to this class. And so I did. And I sat in the parking lot and I cried because I didn't want to go in. I just felt so sad. And then when I went in, somebody said, Isn't there anybody who will be with you? And that, of course, just made me feel worse. I live alone. And sometimes people use that in a way that's not helpful. You know, isn't there anyone? You know, just bring me down another notch. But because I live alone, I'm forced to take care of myself. You know, I have to come up with the strategies. At some point, yes, I'll have to go into a nursing home. I know that. And so laying out those plans, getting that out of the way, then I can focus on the other things, like making music, mm-hmm, making art, volunteering. Volunteering is the best medicine that there is. I really do believe that, because when we help other people, we help ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I find it interesting that you chose to move at that time in your life. And I know that many of the other authors that I've interviewed have done the same. So what was that like, trying to get relocated in a new community when you had already been diagnosed?
It was hard. I mean, it's hard to move anyway. It's leaving a job, mm-hmm, leaving the home I was in, because it was the church's house. They needed that for their next pastor. Okay. And so they weren't pushing me out. They said, stay until find a new place. And they were very helpful. They helped me with my moving day. But it was hard moving to a new community, because I only knew one person in this town that I moved to. But I wanted it to be relatively close to my doctors. And the other thing about when you leave a church, in my tradition, the Presbyterian church, you don't go back to that church. You know, there's a separation so that the members of the congregation can bond to the new pastor. So I was really on my own, and I had to really push myself to start activities. So I signed up to be in a yoga class. I thought that'll give me a place to make friends. Signed up at the college. There's a performing arts center in my town, and they were looking for volunteers, people who would bartend. And I thought, I can pour a beer. I can pour a glass of wine. Mm-hmm. I could do that. You know, it wasn't like I had to remember recipes or anything. So I looked, mm-hmm, for places where I could fit in, but it was hard because I couldn't remember names and faces. So I would ask people if I could take their picture, and then I'd write their name down. You know, I did what I could, but it wasn't easy. But at some point, you just have to make up your mind that sitting home and feeling sorry for myself or yourself doesn't get you anywhere. That there was lots of things I could still do. If you can focus on what you still do, because we all lose skills over the course of our life. We're not the same people that we were in our 20s, where we could climb up mountains or, you know, squat down on the floor and, you know, with ease, get up. Our bodies change, and our abilities change. And so part of life is letting go of the things that don't bless us or that are harder for us, and looking at new possibilities. And when we do that, it shifting gears from why me to what next, I think it opens the possibilities for a life of joy, a life of service.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Good, You also said that you do some advocacy work. What kind of organizations are you working with?
Oh, my gosh. I'm very involved with Dementia Action Alliance, DAA, and you can visit the website, DAA.org. And then I'm connected with the Alzheimer's Association. I'm on several national committees. I'm working right now on a project that's has to do with nomenclature, what we call these diseases that affect adults, these cognitive diseases, and what the terms are used, because there's a lot of stigma around cognitive diseases, cognitive impairments, dementia,
right,
Alzheimer's. And many times people will tell me that they have the same symptoms as me, or that I, but they won't tell their doctor because of they're so afraid of what will happen next. Will their license be taken from them? Will they lose their job? Will their kids take the keys? You know, there's a lot of stigma around disease. People tend to look at those labels, those diagnoses as the end stages, you know, that you walk into the doctor's office with some complaints and you walk out and they've got you in the nursing home in their mind, you know, well, you can't do this anymore. And I think many times it comes from a place of caring and love, but it's a little overprotection.
That's true. I've been told that by a lot of different authors who have said that the family, and for all good reasons and out of love, try to protect and help the person do many simple things that they should be doing for themselves. And then if you're not being permitted to, like, put on your own coat or tie your own shoes, you're going to forget how to do those things. And then it's going to be their job.
Right. It's learned helplessness.
So, exactly. Learned helplessness. That doesn't help.
Right. So, I mean, I have to take out my garbage if no one comes to the door and say, it's here and I'm here to take out your garbage. No, I've got to do it. And that's good. It's good for me. It's good for all of us to have jobs to do and to, to, you know, keep pushing ourselves.
How long have you been living with this illness?
Well, let's see. I started having it when I was 49 in 2003. But I wasn't diagnosed until 2011. I mean, I had problems. I just didn't know why. A while. And people can live with Alzheimer's for 20 years, longer.
Yeah.
I think that what has happened in the past is we wait till things are so serious that people are then go to their doctor and then get the diagnosis. But meanwhile, it's not like they went to bed one night and woke up the next day, that it's a progressive disease and it kind of inches along. Some people, of course, progress more quickly. So when I asked my doctor way back in 2011 what he thought, he said, well, 3 years, maybe longer. And it's like, I'm going for maybe longer. What do I have to do? And so it's like, you have to exercise. Okay, I can do that. I can make sure I eat correctly, get a good night's sleep, you know, avoid stressful situations, stay socially active and engaged, you know, to take care of those things, build up your cognitive reserve, you know, try to push yourself to learn something new. Those are all things that maybe extend that period of time.
That's good advice. I'm sure many of our listeners are paying attention to that. Have you always been a native New Yorker?
Oh, gosh, no. I've moved all around the country. My dad was with a phone company. So I was born in Rhode Island. We moved to Michigan, lived several places in Michigan as the phone company moved him then to the Washington, D.C. area. I grew up in Maryland and we moved to Maryland to New Jersey. And then after I graduated from college, I lived 2 years in Jamaica as a Peace Corps volunteer, and then back to New Jersey, and then to upstate New York, when I was called to be the pastor of the church in Lyons, New York. That was 25 years ago. Yeah, I've been a pastor 25 years.
Wow, that's quite a while.
Yeah.
Do you recognize the photograph behind me?
I do not.
That's New York. I'm in New York too.
Are you? What part?
I'm in the Hudson Valley.
It's beautiful there. Mm-hmm. Are your leaves all changing?
Yeah. This picture is from, I don't know, a while ago, but you can see the river behind me. That's the Hudson River.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you're up in the Finger Lakes. I've been up there and I love it up there. My husband's cousin bought a bed and breakfast up there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in Seneca Lake.
It's a beautiful lake. All the lakes are beautiful, like the fingers of a hand. But there's a river that runs through Elmira, and the Chemung River. And I decided when I moved here, people were doing a lot of boating, that I would buy myself a kayak. And so I would learn how to kayak. And so I went to the group that's local and I said, you know, where can I kayak? Can you show me how to do this? And so that started that interesting adventure of kayaking. So I was always looking for different things I could try.
Mm-hmm. Are you still kayaking?
I am kayaking.
Oh, that's wonderful.
This summer I did something really cool. I brought my kayak up to the Erie Canal and I decided it would be pretty cool to be on the canal and to go through the locks. And I knew a guy who was a lock keeper, and I thought, well, you know, that would be a fun adventure. So I try to look for adventures. I think it makes life interesting.
It sure does, for anybody.
Yeah.
You're a very unique woman. I like that. I think that a lot of people in your position, and maybe I'm wrong, but a lot of women in your position might not be as adventurous as you. Maybe it's because you've always lived on your own, but I have known stories of people who tend to insulate themselves and keep a smaller life, but you just are out there. And I mean, that's fantastic. You're an inspiration to anybody, anybody, regardless of Alzheimer's or not.
Well, I mean, I think that we all have days that are brighter and we all have days that are a little harder to get through. But my mom, I just keep her wisdom is so remarkable to me because it's really sustained me, because she'd say something, no one ever promised you a rose garden. I did one of my masks on that and I covered it with roses. And her point was that everybody has aches and pains. Everybody has problems. Everybody at some point in their life has disappointments and tragedies and heartache, heartbreak. And I've learned this as a pastor. If we can move to a place of acceptance, that other people have struggles and we're not the only ones, if we can find our community, if we can find others that maybe that we could help along the way with the wisdom that we've learned, that just helps everybody. I just, you know, I really have been blessed by this strange journey that I'm on.
Yes, it's truly remarkable. I think you pretty much answered the question of how do you cope in your self-care activity. Was there anything you wanted to add to that? How do you self-care?
How do I self-care? Well, in addition to doing the things that really are important self-care-wise, I make sure that I see my doctor, you know, I whenever I have a doctor's appointment or a dentist appointment, because I have to manage my own medical stuff. So I have to work with my doctors and I ask them all for three reminders. You know, I need a reminder the week before that I'm coming in for a visit. I need a reminder the day before. I need a reminder that morning. And since things are automated now, it's not a big ask, but I had to move past my hesitancy to ask people when I needed help. And I was always the helper. As the pastor, people would come to me because they needed help in terms of finances or food or whatever. So I was the one on the giving end for so long. And it was a little bit hard to be on the receiving end to say, I can't do this. I don't understand this. I don't know what this means. Can you help me? Or, you know, I just can't do this by myself. And it gives people the chance to be the helper. It gives people a chance to extend their gifts and to use their gifts. And I've seen this with care partners where people have offered to stay with a loved one so that care partner could go out for a lunch or a whatever, you know, they don't want to impose on the person, or they don't want to feel needy. But I think that when we let people help us, then we're letting them use their gifts.
Yes. I agree with you 100%. And I say that all the time. Sometimes you ask someone to do something for you and you're helping them more than they're helping you, especially older people or retired people. They have a lot of time on their hands. They're looking for things to do. They want to be helpful and useful.
Right.
And they can help you with tasks or anything you need. Don't be afraid to ask.
Right. It's been wonderful. I know of several families in my area who are living with dementia, and the things that they do together bring them such joy. I was thinking about a couple that they work in the food pantry and they stock the shelves. And I thought, this is something, looking for an activity that you can do with mm-hmm. a person. So everybody feels like they're serving. Everybody gets, you know, that feeling of satisfaction for helping others. We all like mm-hmm. to have that feeling.
What did you do before you became a pastor?
Oh, I've had an interesting life, but
it gets better.
Well, I've had lots of jobs, but before I was a pastor, I worked at Dun & Bradstreet in technical support for 15 years. So I was the person on the phone where people would call and say, I can't connect. My terminal, my computer's not working. And I would, by phone, say, you know, tell me about your equipment. What do you have? It's black. Okay. does it have anything on it that gives us a name? You know, so we were just starting. But I did that for a long time, 15 years. But meanwhile, I was busy in my church in New Jersey, helping with the Sunday school program and moving my way up. And my pastor suggested that I consider taking some classes at seminary. It took me 5 years going part-time to seminary. If you went full-time, it would be like three. But it was 101 credits. It was a long program for that master's in divinity with Greek and Hebrew and all kinds of stuff. But I loved being with people and working with them and being with people. It's such a privilege because you're really with people in their seasons of great joy, marriages, births and baptisms, and sadness of people, on end of life care and those two and everything in between. And what a blessing.
And I bet you were very good at it.
I loved it. And that's why it was so hard when I left the church. It's not that I wanted to leave it, but I just couldn't do it the way it needed to be done. You know, I couldn't say to you, so Marianne, when you were here last month, we talked about this situation in your family. I didn't know why we had talked before. Sometimes people would come in and pick up where we left off. And it's like, I don't remember this at all. Are we planning? Mm. And it's terrible if you make a mistake and say, how is your mother? And you say, you did my mother's funeral. That's just, that's a dagger in somebody's heart, you know?
Devastating.
So I tried faking it for a long time, but that, you know, I just had notebooks and notebooks of notes that I could never find anything in. This is, you know, I think it's been just such, what's the word I want to say? I had to move from that point of despair, that why me? This, it just felt so unfair that I'd worked so hard. And then all of a sudden, it just felt like the rug was pulled out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really mad at God and I was mad at the situation. And then it complicated things because my own mother was going through her dementia symptoms of Alzheimer's and was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And it was just a tough time, but moving past that, working through that grief, because it is a grief, it's a loss, to that sense of, okay, now what, why, from why me to what next?
What was it like to have Alzheimer's while your mother was having Alzheimer's?
One of the complications of my diagnosis was that we couldn't be the same disease because look at mom and look at, you know, I was functioning. I was, and that's why I think we really need to zero in on better nomenclature and better a better way to diagnose people who are worried about cognitive symptoms so that that you have a clear understanding of what's behind those symptoms. And sometimes words are used interchangeably or they're used in different ways. You might say this person has dementia or this person has Alzheimer's and there's some confusion over what is what. And people will sometimes say to me, well, thank goodness I don't have Alzheimer's. I just have dementia. That lack of clarity on what those words mean and what they're using in a clinical setting is often different than what they're looking at in a research setting.
Right. There is a lot of, confusion surrounding the whole diagnosis. And then you have different people whose brains are affected in different ways and they show their symptomology yes. in different ways. And people don't understand how it is all connected. Yeah.
Right.
And for you, like in your situation, being a younger woman and your mom must have been elderly by that point, yes. it's like two completely different things, mm-hmm. I would imagine.
Right. But being able to describe the disease, what's causing the symptoms, with greater clarity so that everybody's on board and we can speak a common language in terms of looking for services because certain treatments that are helpful with one kind of dementia are not helpful with another kind of dementia. In fact, they're counterintuitive. Yeah.
That's a serious issue. There's a lot to be said there. Was there anything else that you wanted to say to the listeners?
I think my words to the listeners would be for whatever life throws at you, and if you are diagnosed with Alzheimer's or another dementia, to focus on what you can still do. You may need to make some changes in your schedule. Those changes may happen anyway, because sometimes our interests change as we age, and sometimes our interests or our hobbies change because of different things that have happened in our lives. Maybe we're not able to do the thing we once loved, but look for new ways of staying active. Don't be afraid to try something new, to take a class or to join an organization. I joined Rotary last year online, and I've loved making friends with my fellow Rotarians on Zoom. So that's just one example, but to volunteer, to look for ways to stay engaged in the community, look for somebody else that needs help.
All very good advice. Thank you so much, Cynthia. It was lovely to meet you and to speak with you, and I wish you well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the time. And, I just want to thank you for connecting people to your wonderful group of authors, this wonderful group of people who've written about their experiences. Some people living with Alzheimer's or another dementia, and others are care partners. Others come at the disease from a different perspective, but it's all helpful. And it's really important that we help people to learn more about this and what's available. And I'm just always heartened by the fact that research holds the key. And so I'm always encouraging people to consider participating in a clinical research project. Mm-hmm. So the way that we're going to get to the cure is if people step up and help out to do that.
That's terrific. Thank you.
Thanks.
It's the Bowtie Guy again, Christopher McClellan. I'm confident you enjoyed this episode of Untangling Dementia and Alzheimer's, featured on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. And be sure to visit allsauthors.com to learn more about their amazing authors, books, and other podcasts. Next week, we'll be introducing you to certified caregiver consultant Elizabeth Miller. Elizabeth is the presenter of happy, healthy caregiver, Anne. She has quite the story to share with you. We'll have more information about Elizabeth coming up next week as her show debuts on UK Health Radio. Now, speaking of UK Health Radio, don't go anywhere. Our next show will be starting right after this quick break. Make it a great day. We'll see you soon. Bye for now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.